Tonight, our focus is going to be on the issue of technology. Last week, those of you who are here will remember that we spent some time talking about meta-narratives and the impact that those meta-narratives have on the way you understand the question of meaning in life. And you may remember that very generally and very simply, I suggested that there are two ways that you might look at the question of life's meaning. You might, on the one hand, think that there is a point to everything, and on the other hand, you might not think there's a point to anything. And I suggested also that these two general outlooks corresponded to two different perspectives on the world, two fundamentally different outlooks. One outlook I called naturalism, the other outlook I called supernaturalism. And I spent a little bit of time unpacking the implications of naturalism for the question of meaning. Now, last week I also told you at the very end that tonight and also next week, the plan is to try to introduce you to how this big picture view of things has practical implications for two important issues in culture. Those two issues, just to remind you, are technology, that's tonight, and then next week, we're going to spend some time talking a little bit about the implications of this big picture for sexuality. So tonight, tonight, though, we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about technology. Now, you might think, when you start thinking about this really big picture that I painted last week, and you start thinking about the practical aspects of technology, you might think, what do these two things have to do with each other? How is it that they could possibly be related? Well, I'm going to cut right to the chase by employing a quotation from one of my favorites, C.S. Lewis. C.S. Lewis wrote a book called The Abolition of Man. I highly recommend it. If you have not read it, I've probably read it at least half a dozen times. It's a short book comprised of three lectures. And in this book, one of the things that Lewis says is he says that if you have a naturalistic outlook on the world, you are potentially going to undermine the basis of morality. And if you undermine the basis of morality, you ultimately undermine human nature itself. Now, there's this very poignant moment in the third chapter of this book when Lewis says this. It's a lengthy quotation. You don't need to write it down. I'm going to read it to you, and then I'm going to try to draw out the two salient points. He says, "There is something which unites magic and applied science, while separating both from the wisdom of earlier ages. For the wise men of old," he says, "the cardinal problem, the chief difficulty, was how to conform the soul to reality." That was the most important project, he says, for the wise people who lived long ago. How do you conform the soul to reality? And the solution to that problem had been, he says, knowledge, self-discipline, and virtue. That's the solution to the problem of old. He says, for magic and applied science, the problem is how to subdue reality to the wishes of men. And he says the solution is a technique. And I underline that word technique because obviously etymologically the word technique is related to the word for technology. Now Lewis, I think, quite concisely captures the relationship between technology and these big picture perspectives that I described last week, where I talked about two ways to view life. On the one hand, I suggested that if you adopt the perspective that there is no ultimate purpose to anything, that the universe is ultimately indifferent to your existence, then you bear the burden of becoming the maker of meaning. You have to make up your own meaning. And for some, this is quite liberating. It's a kind of freedom in which they think they can sort of make up their own reality. For others, the liberation actually becomes overwhelming, and the obligation to become your own God becomes a point of despair. On the other hand, if you adopt what we call the supernaturalistic outlook, this big picture perspective, then you have the occasion of living your life in keeping with a meaning that's already being written, a big story that was already underway before you ever came along. And at that point, meaning becomes a process of discovery for you, rather than a burden that you have to bear to make up. Now, what Lewis does in this quotation that I just read for you is he really sets up this contrast quite nicely. And here's how he sets it up. If you're going to adopt a naturalistic outlook, then as he says, and I've got this on the right-hand side of the slide, then your problem is, I'm sorry, I have it on the left-hand side of the slide. On the left-hand side of the slide, your problem is how to subdue reality to your own wishes. In other words, how do I get things to work out the way that I want them to? How do I get life to work out in keeping with my desires? That's your goal. And Lewis says the solution to that particular problem is technique. It's technology, and that's why he brings together magic and applied science. He says they're sort of like the same thing. Because for both magic and for applied science, namely technology, the problem is, how do I make reality do what I want it to do? Now, that's different if you have a different sort of outlook overall. If you have a supernaturalistic outlook, then the problem isn't how do I get reality to conform to the way I want it to be, but the problem then is, how do I get me, my soul, to conform with how reality already is? Because reality for you at that point is a given. One way to capture the difference is the way that I've suggested in the bottom row of each of these two columns. On the one hand, if you have a naturalistic outlook, then you don't view the self as being subject to anything, at least to nothing that's given. You come into the world, you are the captain of your own fate, you're the master of your own soul, and nobody makes the rules for you. You are not subject to any given. But on the other hand, if you have a supernaturalistic outlook, you do believe that reality is given. There is a givenness to reality. It already has a pattern. It has a shape. And so your obligation then, as a self, is to live in accordance with that givenness of that pattern of reality. Now, I want to be very clear here. What you're going to hear tonight, especially when you hear Dr. Mitchell come up shortly and give his presentation, is not an argument against technology. This is not an argument against technology. And that's because technology is itself an inescapable fact of human existence. It's unavoidable. And that's true even for Lewis. Lewis's point here is not an argument against technology, because you can't avoid it. It's part of being human. Part of being human is to exercise yourself in ways which are going to have a shaping impact on your environment, on your surroundings. And when you do that, you're going to be exercising techniques. In fact, the ancient Greek word from which we get our word technology is the word techne, which just means craft. If you make things, if you make something of the world, you are inevitably going to shape the things around you. So technology or technique is inescapable. And since it's inescapable, I'm not trying to argue that we should not have technology, nor is Dr. Mitchell, nor is C.S. Lewis. But technologies are not ever neutral. Technologies are never, ever in and of themselves neutral. Now, unfortunately, the time limitations prevent me from developing this point. I've got enough material to back up this point, but it would take me probably 2 hours just to convince you of its truth. I don't expect you to take my word for it, but I do expect you to note it and to note that this is a bias of mine. Technology is not neutral. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean that some technologies will conform the soul to reality, and other technologies tend inherently to subdue reality to the wishes of men. Here's another way of saying that same thing. Some technological artifacts and some technological forms tend more towards a supernaturalistic outlook, and others tend more towards a naturalistic outlook by their very nature. That's what I mean when I say they are not ever neutral. Now, why is that important? Well, if technology is an inescapable aspect of human existence, and it's important to try to live in keeping with your overall meta-narrative, then it's going to be important for you to know what technological support forms and what technological artifacts either support and sustain or work against different kinds of meta-narratives. Let me give you a for example. If you are a Christian, if you are someone who thinks that this is the big story that's being written by God, and you're seeking to live your life in keeping with this big story, then it's important for you to know whether or not the technologies that you are surrounded by actually help to shape your soul in keeping with this story or not. That's the important reflection point. Now, of course, you might not accept this story. You might actually accept the naturalistic story, in which case it really won't be important for you at that point to think about whether or not the technologies that surround you in your life actually help shape your soul in keeping with this story. Because at that point, you might think, I'm going to adopt and embrace whatever technologies enable me to subdue reality to my wishes. But either way, no matter what side you fall on, the important point is the relationship between these two things. Technologies either shape your soul in ways which support your story, or they shape your soul in ways which are out of keeping with that story. And so it's important for you to reflect on whether or not the technologies that surround you do either one of those things. Now, that's a hard thing to do. It's not something I expect you to be able to do all in one night, especially just after hearing this first lecture. But it's something that over the course of your educational experience here at Union, you should give thought to. And the reason I say this is because I am convinced that today, the vast majority of the technology that we are surrounded by on a daily basis presupposes something that is at odds with this picture of the world. It presupposes a radically different sort of picture of the world. Because in this picture of the world, God's the author of the story. He's taking history somewhere, and our job, if we're going to line up with this story, is to try to live in keeping with its big picture. But that is not, by and large, the story that is supported and sustained by the vast majority of our technologies today. In contrast, the vast majority of our technologies today support and sustain what I call a techno-utopian meta-narrative. Now, it's a big word, it's a complicated word. Don't get hung up on the word. Follow the thought, because the thought is actually really simple. The thought is this, that since there is no overall purpose to life in the universe, if history is headed anywhere at all, then the place where it's headed is wherever we want it collectively to go. That's it. Let me say that again, in case you want to put that in your notes. If history is headed anywhere at all, according to this story, if history is headed anywhere at all, then the only place it's headed is wherever we collectively want it to go. And that's because, according to this big story, the history of reality looks something like this. And here you sort of have to follow the chart on the arrow. You start out at the beginning of history. The universe is all there is. There is no God in the picture. And lo and behold, as a matter of a cosmic accident, we get this beginning of this unguided evolutionary process. Over a period of time, this unguided evolutionary process eventually results in the emergence of human beings who find themselves with two very important characteristics, at least with respect to this process. One is that they have consciousness. The other is that they have will, consciousness and willpower. But very importantly, in this picture of the universe, there is no fall from an original state of perfection. No fall. No fall in will, no fall in knowledge, no fall in consciousness, no disobedience. There is simply the movement forward beyond the point where human beings achieve consciousness and will. And eventually, as we move forward through the centuries, we get to a point in human history where this process no longer simply runs on its own accord. Instead, what happens is that human beings themselves achieve technological mastery over the whole process. And by the way, we are now living at that moment in history. And you might ask, well, if you have this picture, where are we headed? Well, according to those who hold such a view, we are headed wherever we want. Because what the technologies are supposed to do for us, according to this picture, is they are supposed to allow us to shape or to reshape reality in conformity with what I call unfettered human desire. And what I mean by the unfettered is, I mean totally free. Free to do whatever you want. That is what most of these technological forms that we are surrounded by presuppose about the world, by and large. I don't have time to go through examples, but I could go through numerous examples, including some of the simpler technologies like search technologies, Google, technologies like Amazon, social networking technologies, gaming technologies like Second Life. Dr. Mitchell will talk about some of these in his presentation. And then even more cutting-edge technologies that involve the interface between human beings and machine. What all of these technologies do is they enable the actualization of your desires in an immediate, unfettered way. Now, what's challenging about this perspective from a Christian point of view is that since this big story doesn't include any account of human fallenness, it simply trusts that human desire unleashed will result in the end in some kind of goodness, ultimately, for the history of reality. And that assumption is a dangerous assumption. And yet, it is a temptation that you face by virtue of the technologies that surround you on a day-to-day basis. Because in effect, what these technologies offer you is they offer you what Bono sang about. In his song, Vertigo, I'm sure some of you have heard it, there is a sequence in that song that's actually reminiscent of Christ's temptation in the wilderness. In that temptation in the wilderness, Satan comes to Christ. He takes him to a high mountain, and he says to him, as Bono puts it, all of this can be yours. All of this can be yours. And in fact, what technology tells you too, as part of that big picture that we just looked at a moment ago, is you can have whatever you want, and in fact, you can have whatever you want in ways which won't hurt anyone. Now imagine that for a moment. If technology promises that you can have whatever you want in a way that no one will get hurt, why not take it? Why not take it? I mean, why not simply latch on to such a promise? If I can have whatever my heart desires, whatever I want, and I can have it in a way that won't hurt anyone else, why not take that? That is, in effect, what technology, what many technologies are offering today. Because they are offering a world in which desire is unleashed in an unfettered way so that the process of the collective desires of human beings can move us forward. And by the way, just as an aside, one of the reasons that so many folks who are confident in this big picture that I've just painted, one of the reasons that they're confident in the prospect that no one will get hurt is because they're confident that if someone does, technology can fix it. Now, I want to show you a quick clip from a film. The film will introduce itself, and the film will also set up the things that Dr. Mitchell has to say. I think the film captures, this little clip captures quite nicely, this idea of the promise of technology. Interestingly, this particular film deals with a subject that I suspect many of you may think is sort of science fiction and sort of way out there and way beyond the realm of possibility. The reality is, as Dr. Mitchell will show you, that the possibilities which are discussed in this particular film, and you'll see this in the clip, are actually right around the corner. They're just on the horizon. And this is why it is so crucial for all of you, as you move through your college experience, to begin to think about the way in which your overall outlook on life affects how you view things in the culture like technology. Because if you don't think about that connection between your overall outlook and the way that you're going to interact with something as important as technology, then very likely you are going to be seduced by the temptation. You're going to be seduced by the temptation that you can have whatever you want and no one gets hurt. And so my challenge tonight, and technology's challenge to you, is will you consider your interaction with a cultural issue as important as technology from the standpoint of these big picture ideas that we've been talking about? Let's go ahead and cue the clip. Whether it is a lie is something that you will have to think about, and I suppose if you want to find out, you'll have to watch the whole movie if you haven't already. We're going to stand up for just a minute, take a 2-minute break.